Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. This week, Simone Biles, one of the most decorated and beloved gymnasts in U.S. Olympic history, has come forward with her story of how she was sexually abused by former gymnastics doctor at Michigan State University, Larry Nassar. Biles is now more than 140 girls and women who have come forward to accuse Nassar of sexual misconduct. Now, he's already been sentenced to 60 years in prison on child pornography charges, and last fall pleaded guilty to multiple counts of sexual assault. He now awaits sentencing for those crimes. But the question we want to ask now is, how did it come to this? More than 140 girls and women is so profoundly disturbing, and all their voices point to a critical fact. The accusers say they were failed by the very institutions that they worked so hard for and that they trusted, the USA Gymnastics and Michigan State University. Joining me now to discuss the latest and the bigger picture regarding the Nassar hearing, as well as a growing lawsuit against Michigan State, is Alexandra Starr, WNYC reporter, and one who has documented the sexual exploitation in the Olympics for Harper's Magazine. Hi, Alexandra. Thanks for coming on again.
Hi. Thank you.
What's actually new this week, if anything, other than the name Simone Biles, which makes people gasp?
Yeah, it does. So this week, I think almost 100 women and girls have come forward in court to describe the impact of what Nassar did to them over the course of years in a lot of cases. And it's been devastating, honestly, to see and to read. So we knew that there were all of these cases against him. What we're seeing now are the testimonies of the consequences of that for these girls for the rest of their lives.
One example of an apparent failure by USA Gymnastics, reported by the Wall Street Journal, is that they waited more than a month to report an accusation against Nassar to law enforcement. Is that typical of a pattern?
Yes, it is. It is. Now, I will say, Brian, there was fallout for USA Gymnastics. I mean, this is not unique to USA Gymnastics, just to provide a little bit of context. There's the U.S. Olympic Committee, and then under it, there are about 47 different governing bodies for each of the sports. USA Swimming knew about a child predator in its coaching ranks, and they did nothing about it.
As we talked about last time
when
you
right.
were on.
That's right. USA Gymnastics sat on this information about Nassar. And there are questions as well as to whether this was the first time they had an inkling that something was wrong. When that came to light, the head of USA Gymnastics, Steve Penny, was forced to resign. And there was a broader consequence as well that I can get into. When the scandals broke in USA Swimming in 2010, the USOC, so the head of the US Olympic Committee, said, all right, we are going to create a separate entity that will just deal with sexual abuse and harassment complaints. Because the feeling was that the individual sport governing bodies just were not up to the task, mm-hmm. or they did not see that as part of their mandate.
Uh-huh.
So they talked about that. And then, you know, for years, people were like, when is that coming along? And they were like, well, we're having a lot of trouble fundraising. Then after the Nassar story broke, it happened. So now we have a new entity called US Safe Sport. It's based in Denver, Colorado. And for the story I did for Harper's, I interviewed the new head. Her name is Shelley Fole.
Gymnast Michaela Maroney and USA Gymnastics agreed to a $1.25 million settlement in December 2016, which required Maroney to keep the accusations against Nassar confidential. But this week, Maroney spoke out. Let's take a listen to Michigan prosecutor Angela Povilaitis reading Michaela Maroney's statement in court.
A question that has been asked over and over, how could have Larry Nassar been allowed to assault so many women and girls for more than two decades? The answer to that question lies in the failure of not one, but three major institutions to stop him. Michigan State University, the United States Gymnastics Association, and the United States Olympic Committee. When my story became public, the U.S. Olympic Committee said, quote, "Each doctor working with our athletes undergoes background checks, including an evaluation of medical licensure actions." Unfortunately, this predator was not identified by any organization during the time in question, unquote.
Is anything there new to you, Alexandra? And how do you understand the disconnect that she's describing there?
I wouldn't say there's anything new to me in that, but I've been immersed in this for a long time.
Right.
I think, though, there is a moment of reckoning in the sense that these female athletes are rightfully infuriated, right? And they're not just calling out USA Gymnastics. They're calling out the U.S. Olympic Committee. And I think in a broader sense, they are saying it's not okay that you did not keep us safe, right? The USOC does not... So just to provide a little bit of context, in a lot of countries, the organization that runs the Olympics for that country, they get a check basically from their governments. The USOC does not. So in some ways, some people say it's basically a marketing entity. Now, it's pretty easy to raise money off of the Olympics, right? So let's not sob for the USOC.
Clearly.
But the way they then see their mandate, or have been accused of seeing their mandate, is money and medals. And they're pretty open about the fact. Scott Blackmon, the head of the USOC, has said, like, our goal is how many medals can we get around the necks of our athletes? And the corollary to that is, and that is how we're going to raise a ton of money for this institution. USA Gymnastics did a phenomenal job on that metric, right? The women's team, I mean, my God.
Well-funded.
Yeah, well-funded. Oh, my gosh. And then also just, you know, they were on the cover of Newsweek. You know, it was an enormous patriotic thing for all of us when they did so well in 2012 and in 2016. I would argue, though, that if USA Gymnastics was very really good at, you know, sweeping the medals podium, they had also created a culture in the sport that made it possible for someone like Larry Nassar to thrive.
And I think people don't realize, and I've only begun to learn this by reading about this story, how much power a doctor wields in determining who gets to go to the Olympics. Can you talk about that dynamic?
Yeah, that was stunning for me to learn too. So, you know, in some sports, it's pretty obvious who is going to go to the Olympics, right? If you swim an incredible, you know, 100 meters,
You're going.
that's decided. Gymnastics, the scoring is more subjective. And even if you are the highest scorer, that does not necessarily mean that you make the team.
Huh.
They make a decision about, are you healthy? You know, are you injured? How do they perform? So that gave someone like Larry Nassar an extraordinary amount of power because he knew what was happening to these women's bodies. And there is, he did an interview with a podcast called Gymtastic, and it's well known within the gymnastics community, where he said, you have to be careful in what you reveal to the coaches and what you reveal to the Carolis, because if not, the girls won't confide in you. Mm. And if the girls don't confide in you, then they'll tell the other girls and no one will trust you. So you can see how he manipulated this system to do just horrific things to these young people.
And listeners, if you have a question for WNYC's Alexandra Starr on the bigger picture that, you know, part of now is Simone Biles, one of the most decorated gymnasts in Olympic history, coming forward with her story of how she was sexually abused by former gymnastics doctor at Michigan State, Larry Nassar. And Alexandra has previously reported on this for Harper's. 212-433-WNYC, 433 9692. One other thing about the Michaela Maroney story, the non-disclosure agreement, if that's the right term for it, $1.25 million as a settlement in December 2016 regarding her, the abuse of her, but it required Maroney to keep the accusations against Nassar confidential. Really?
I know. I know, it's breathtaking, isn't it? I think, Brian, though, in some ways it's showing how much the broader culture is changing and shifting. You know, we think that is outrageous. This guy was a predator, you know, who had preyed on well over 100 girls. But I think within that context, and if you look at it from the perspective of USA Gymnastics, they have a brand to preserve, right? And so basically they're saying, fine, we'll pay you off, but be quiet. You know, for the story I did for Harper's, I spent a lot of time with one of the first women who came forward against Larry Nassar, and she had served on the board of USA Gymnastics. She said that I think over the course of 6 years, the issue of sexual abuse had come up just once, and it came up in the context of, yeah, we're going to have to write a check, but don't worry, it's going to be done quietly, and it's not going to affect our bottom line.
Let's take a phone call. Nick in Brooklyn on the university angle. Nick, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I was, this is a great show. I was wondering why the solution to these ubiquitous issues, not just in sports, all over the place, why the solution is never criminal. In other words, it's always treated as a civil case. People pay fines. They have to resign from their jobs. I don't understand why the people who clearly knew that this was going on and in many cases helped to cover it up and propagate the continuance of this behavior, why they're not behind bars?
That's an interesting question, and I know that the university is facing a growing lawsuit from more than 140 people, but even in that context, it's arguing that it's not liable under Michigan state law and that the lawsuit should be dismissed. Alexandra, I don't think you're a lawyer. I don't know if you can answer his question about criminal versus civil liability, but have you thought about that?
Yes, and Nick, that is an excellent question. What I found in my reporting is that it is very difficult to bring a criminal case. Now, I looked at it mostly from the perspective of the victims. And in a state like New York, for example, you have to bring a criminal case against the perpetrator by the time you turn 23 if the abuse occurred when you were a minor. And almost no one comes forward that early in their lives, in part because oftentimes they don't even really realize they've been abused. So it's much easier to bring a civil case. I actually spoke with a gymnast who brought a criminal and civil case against her former coach. She lost. He was not convicted on criminal charges, but he was convicted on civil charges, in part because the bar is lower. And it was very upsetting to her, the outcome of the criminal case. But the civil case did include provisions that meant he could never coach again, and that was what was most important to her.
Holly in Schenectady, you're on WNYC. Hi, Holly.
Hey.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
What's your question?
Well, I'd like to know if the speaker's open to what I would call, and I have an acronym for this, CMCP, Collective Male Control Policy, because a lot of, like, to me, all the news, I mean, obviously it's been established that things are very, very dynamically chaotic right now, and I think it really mirrors the domestic abuse model, and I find that there's a lot of what I would call adjustable rate lying, which is something that I, you know, have made up a term for, because it's like this thing that abusive males create these huge dramatic scenes to just I don't know, obliterate everything but them or something. And I just really find that there are definite parallels between the domestic abuse model and what we're seeing in politics, especially now in the past week. It's just really bad, I think. I mean, yeah. Am I crazy? I just think it's established. So,
and Holly, when you say collective male control policy, what an interesting phrase. Are you referring to the fact that up the chain, maybe even in something like women's gymnastics, a man is in charge and the person above him is a man and the person above him is a man, and it makes it harder to get action on this kind of thing?
Well, yes. And not only is it those men, it's all the boys she knows, all the men she knows. Look, even at work, like when I talk about this, because I'm very vocal about it, because I believe in it, and I believe I have like sort of a translation system I made up called Secret Historic Male Code. And that's a hashtag I post a lot on Twitter about it. And it's almost like the Da Vinci Code, but it's real. And that's what's causing everywhere all these different paradigm conflicts or like a bubble effect.
Holly, thank you so much. Alexandra, what do you think about any of that, including the domestic violence parallel?
Holly, I think that's very insightful.
And what a way with words.
I was going to say, I'm going on Twitter right after this. I have to say it was very depressing to report this piece. For 5 months, I mean, I spoke with well over a dozen people who had been violated in such a fundamental way at a young age. And when they did come forward, almost universally, they were basically told to be quiet. It was infuriating. It was upsetting. And Holly, you are right. A lot of the people who were telling them to be quiet were men. Now, not universally. You know, the head of gymnastics at Michigan State University, who employed Larry Nassar, also told the people who had come to her, basically, be quiet. This could hurt Dr. Nassar. Be quiet. It was wrong then, and if there is some optimism, if I have some more optimism now, is that I do see things changing. I think the outrage over this case is a signal of how things are changing.
Holly, do you want people to follow you on Twitter? You can give out your hashtag. I have a feeling after what you said earlier, some people might be interested. So feel free if you'd like to.
It's just, I'm Lens Jockey on Twitter, at Lens Jockey, like a photographer, LensJockey. And my name is Holly Van Vost. And, you know, I'm actually working on a screenplay to leak the actual secret core code of this problem, which I have not seen anyone bring up. And it's really kind of unbelievable because it's not what we're even programmed to believe as people, I think. I think there's like a pathological male approval concerns problem. That's just what it seems like to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so everywhere. It's like, it's the guys you work with. It's everybody you work with. Some women are pathologically male approval, like, obsessed, you know, it, just like guys are. But it's just like, it's just this, it's a bubble. And it's a mental bubble, and I think it's been pierced, and this is what I think it's about. And I believe, like, the programming part of it, I think, is very significant because of the weird, like, coded words being used, like impassioned and tough and stuff for shithole. And it's like, it's all these weird code words that men have created to just shut women up.
Holly, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. We've just got about a minute and a half left. I hear the encouraging words that you've been speaking, Alexandra, which makes it sound like, at least in USA Gymnastics, they now take the problem very seriously and something structurally seems to be changing. Can you elaborate on that and put it a little bit in the context of USA Olympics as a whole, and tell me if you think things are changing sort of evenly, so the risk is diminishing across the board similarly?
So USA Gymnastics has instituted policies that are some of, honestly, like, best in the business now. They, very simply, like, coaches can't be alone with their athletes when they're traveling. You know, very basic things to keep people safe. USA Safe Sport, I would argue that I think the jury's still out there. They have been receiving even more complaints in the aftermath of what happened for USA Gymnastics. And I think there is a question about whether they're sufficiently staffed at this point. It's going to be a long road, Brian. But I do think that the fact that these girls and women are coming forward is making a difference and will make a difference.
And again, USA Safe Sport is?
So that's the watchdog. And the idea is that if you are part of one of these national governing bodies, so say you're on the U.S. Olympic fencing team or something, and your coach is being inappropriate or sexually harassing you, you can go to U.S. Safe Sport and lodge a complaint. You can see why that's a good idea, because if you were complaining to the head of USA Fencing, right, wouldn't you possibly be worried that you would get kicked off of the team? Mm. You know, so it was necessary. It's kind of ridiculous. It took this long for it to happen, but it did.
WNYC's Alexandra Starr, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.